Hey, I know. I'll use my trusty frying pan as a drying pan.
Everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Out of the Drying Pan, a Pokemon the Series podcast, where each week we discuss two episodes of the Pokemon series anime, or sometimes we mix it up and do something else, something fun. Just a quick reminder, we are an EFIX exclusive podcast, so listener discretion is advised. I am your host, Alex, and I'm joined this week by my co-host, Austin. Hi, Austin.
Are we doing something fun today?
We are doing something fun today.
Oh, really? What?
But we are. We're doing something different. We're doing something, or at least in my case, spooky, which is thematically appropriate for the time, which I'm excited for. Mm.
We got to figure out if we're going to do a Halloween episode this year.
I know. This is not our Halloween episode, just to be clear, but there are Halloween flavors. I can't speak for Austin, but I can speak for myself, so I'm excited.
What are Halloween flavors? Pumpkin? Chocolate? Razor blade?
Bloody murder? We're doing, if you haven't already guessed, we're doing our third, I can't believe it, third fan fiction writing activity.
Technically fourth.
Wait, what was the...
We had a Patreon request.
Ah, that's right. Our Patreon patron Tristan had commissioned Austin to write a very, very exciting prompt featuring Brock and Professor Ivy. That was really great.
But what's funny is we had more than one patron who can suggest a fan fiction for the podcast. And yet only one person has, so I don't know what that says about our rewards.
So just remind our listeners what tier they can subscribe to and request a fan fiction.
Ooh, I should know this. I don't know this. I think it's Ash's Good for Nothing Father.
That's one of our tier levels, and while Austin checks on that to be sure we tell you correctly, yes, that is one of the features. If you subscribe to our Patreon and take advantage of all the cool perks that we have there. One of them is you can suggest to any of us, well, in this case, me and Austin at the moment, a fan fiction to write, and we will write it. Maybe fail at it, but we'll try.
Oh, it was Johto Annual Festival Attendee, which is only $5 a month.
Yeah, so if you want to become a Johto Festival attendee, you can write in and suggest a fan fiction. So definitely encourage that. All right, Austin. So that is what we are doing. You know what? I went back yesterday because I couldn't really remember, and I wanted to get some inspiration in a moral sense. No, I wanted to get inspiration. I wanted kind of a hype man. I was like, okay, I need to go back and listen to how Austin did it and Jacob did it and how I did it.
Jacob used ChatGPT and melted a glacier somewhere.
That's true. He did do that. But you know what? He still completed the assignment, and we're proud of him for that. But I was really tickled because I went back and listened to your silly entry, and it was the Mr. Douglas's tractor fanfiction, and I was laughing. It was hilarious. If anybody doesn't know what Mr. Douglas's tractor is in reference to, go back and listen to our Ladybot episode.
Yeah, for sure, because we need more downloads, especially for the fanfiction episode.
They may not be our most downloaded episodes, but we definitely still welcome fan engagement, and we like to flex our creative writing muscles here on Out of the Drying Pan, so.
Oh, speaking of engagement, you said you had a message?
Yes, that is right. Our follower on Instagram, Liam, shout out to Liam, gave us a fun suggestion, because I think this is in regards to the fact that we kind of struggle with our randomizer. Since Jacob is gone.
Good, we need the suggestion. We desperately need that.
Thank you, Liam. He says, fun suggestion. One of you permanently be heads and the other tails and flip every time instead of doing the randomizer.
No, I agree for sure.
Thank you, Liam. This is going to help us because we always fucking forget and it's a disaster every time because we are amateurs. So thank you. He says, like you said, it's only two of you. So.
Yep. There's more third host guests on the schedule, in theory.
Perfect. Can't wait to have them join. Mix it up a little bit. Which, you know what? I'm glad. I'm glad that we are mixing it up a little bit. The fan fiction was fun. I know I give you shit and I, quote unquote, complain about it. But at the end of the day, I enjoyed the exercise.
After the series of anxiety-ridden text messages you sent me, one after another, for hours, all day, for the last 3 days...
Okay, you know where it comes from? It comes from, I'm fishing for help because you are the writer. I'm like, Austin, help me. It's me throwing you a life, like a lifeline.
Don't blow me up like that. Don't do that.
Okay. But you're definitely better. And so I'm like, any tips and tricks you could give me? And you're like, you got to sink or swim. You got to figure it out. But in a sense, that kind of helped me.
That's my problem with these episodes is I just do it in one draft and I'm like, okay, done. And I don't go back. Instead, I go back and it's like total garbage.
You say that.
Typos and like sentence structure. No,
you say that. And then I'm always thoroughly impressed with what you claim you just like shat out. And I'm like, and meanwhile, I'm over here agonizing over every sentence choice and every verb choice I'm making. Anyway, it was a fun exercise, like I said, because we had to step outside of our comfort zone. So if you're familiar at all with our last fanfiction episode, it's called Two Fan, Two Fiction. So if you want to hear us embarrass ourselves, go back and listen to that episode. One of the ideas that I had thrown out during that episode was that we all take the same prompt and write from it. So I think later on the idea evolved and Austin gave the prompt of Imposter Oak. So that was our theme for this time.
Where did I come up with that?
For some reason, Imposter Oak has turned into a like an in-joke. And if you don't know who Imposter Oak is, I think it's started with the Pokemon TCG, right? It's like a card.
As far as I'm aware, yeah.
Where it's just like a sinister version of Oak. And so that was the singular prompts. So we had to write something based on that character or whatever we came up with. But we also had some self-imposed restrictions. I could not write anything related to romance. And Austin couldn't write anything related to horror. Although I will say I may have kind of sort of tiny cheated at the end.
Let's find out. No more foreplay. Let's get into it.
Here we go. This is our third, potentially fourth fan fiction episode on Out of the Drying Pan.
Alex, do you want to go first, or would you rather I go first?
I can go first. It doesn't matter. I kind of want to get it out of the way. Yeah.
Okay. All right, if you think
so. I've been sitting on this like as a nervous energy. I wrote this in a couple days. I was up until 3:30 in the morning finalizing the ending.
Good Lord, Alex.
So, I put a lot of care into what I want. I want to put out a quality product. I don't.
This is why we're not doing the fan fiction episodes anymore. This is the last one.
Let's never say never. Let's never say never. Potentially, let's return to this in maybe another year. But anyway, okay. I didn't come up with a title. The title is just Imposter Oak.
Okay, great.
Classic. Untitled work number 3, I guess. I will just preface this by saying that I wrote way more than I intended. And it's actually 3.5 pages long.
Oh, okay.
So I know that doesn't sound like a lot, but it's that 11-point font.
Makes me think of the Futurama quote. It took me an hour to write it. I thought it would take an hour to read it.
All right, here we go. No more delay. Gary Oak tapped his foot impatiently as he looked down at his watch. 6:17. The last afternoon ferry to Cinnabar Island was always promptly left at 6:30. So last-minute boarding was ending in 3 minutes. He shouldn't be surprised at this rate. Ash was always late. If anything, this was his own fault. He told him to meet at the ferry terminal at 6 o'clock sharp. Cursing silently, Gary idly wondered if he should have told him to meet an hour earlier than necessary. At least then maybe Ash would have been punctual. Excuse me, sorry, whoops, didn't see you. Move, please, coming through. A few angry grumbles and murmurs from the crowd grabbed Gary's attention as he looked up to see a familiar, if somewhat haggard-looking young man. Let me guess, you over... The raven-haired young man held up his hand to silence him, breathing heavily as he doubled over to rest his hand on his knees. Yeah, yeah, I overslept. Graveyard shift at Pidgey's is literal hell. And that Pidgeys. Damien... he works at Pidgey's.
Okay.
And that
Sorry,
Damien...
Sorry, what is Pidgeys?
You'll see.
Okay, I'll find out.
Graveyard shift at Pidgey's is literal hell. Actually, I will say, I'll interrupt myself. Feel free to interject.
Okay.
If you, like, we can kind of banter throughout this. Like, I don't want it to be just, like, a straight read-through if you don't want it. Anyway. Graveyard Shift at Pidgey's is literal hell, and that Damien is a ball buster. I spent 2 hours scrubbing the grill and cleaning the soda machine. He had me redo both before I could leave. Anyway, you know that alarm clock's never worked right since I accidentally threw it at the wall. Gary rolled his eyes. Just buy a new one for fuck's sake and quit that damn job of yours. That place's burgers are hot garbage anyway. You should seriously consider working for Gramps at the lab. Ash straightened up, letting out an exasperated breath. I can't. That clock is commemorative. They don't even make them anymore. And I'll think about it. I'm no academic. You know that. Gary shrugged. Gramps could always use a shit shoveler. Someone has to pick up after those Tauros of yours.
I like how Gary has a dirty mouth.
I had to throw in a little something. They're older. If it's not implied, they're older. They're young adults.
I can't wait to find out if Pikachu is still alive or not.
Spoiler alert, I didn't include him in this.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. Gramps could always use a shit shoveler. Someone has to pick up after those Tauros of yours. Ash put up his middle finger. Anyway, I'm here now, aren't I? Fashionably late, what can I say? I wouldn't miss your first ever presentation. The ferry's final departure warning whistle blared, and the ferry attendant flitted about the dock, urging any remaining stragglers to board. As they took their seats, Gary pulled his backpack onto his lap and began rummaging through it. He produced a well-worn, handsome leather-bound journal and began thumbing through the pages. Ash noticed his fidgeting and raised a quizzical brow. Gary must have sensed his expression, despite having deeply entrenched himself into his reading. Just refreshing my memory on my research notes for the conference, he said, not looking up. Ash looked out the ferry window, watching a couple of Wingulls soar by. It was another half hour to the island, and he was already bored. He glanced over at Gary, who was intently studying something in his journal, and noticed the corner of a glossy piece of colorful paper sticking out from the crisp white pages. Ash plucked the brochure, which had been nestled between the adjacent pages, from the notebook. So, the annual Cinnabar Pokemon Research Fellowship Symposium, huh? Before he could flip through the pamphlet, Gary plucked it from his grasp and slid it back into the inner pocket of his sport coat. Ash grinned, then clapped his friend on the shoulder. Gary Oak, Pokemon expert extraordinaire. Gary gave a sharp, dismissive exhale, but couldn't hide a small half-smile. Hardly. I'm just a junior research fellow. He picked nervously at a small hangnail on his finger. I've never known you to be nervous, Ash teased. I'm not. Well, maybe a little. But Gramps asked me to contribute to his conservation seminar this year, so of course I couldn't say no. Gary closed his notebook, fastening the leather strap closed. From their vantage, they could see Cinnabar Island peeking over the horizon. The ferry horn blared.
Are they going to make out?
No. This isn't a romance, remember?
Darn it.
Sorry. You told me. That was my restriction. I couldn't do it. Welcome to the Cinnabar Mansion Hotel. The receptionist was cheerful as he typed their details into the computer. While the receptionist checked them in, Gary watched as Ash absentmindedly wandered off into the grand foyer, inspecting the volcanic-themed decor as he shuffled along, at one point nearly knocking over what looked to be a Darmanitan statue, and then fumbling clumsily with his Pokédex phone. Ugh, he can't ever sit still. He never changes, Gary thought. Ash seemed like he was making a phone call, so he turned his attention back to the reception desk just as the attendant was handing him their key cards. We have your reservation, Mr. Oak. 2 Ocean View rooms. Just a reminder, complimentary breakfast ends at 8:30. I see you're a conference attendee as well. Gary nodded, and the young man continued. Very good. Tomorrow's event is being held on the second level, just up the stairs in the ballroom on the left. Will there be anything else? When Gary shook his head, he motioned to the elevators. Your rooms are on level 3. We hope you enjoy your stay.
I hate how they have 2 rooms and not a single room, because they're lovers.
It's not implied. Where is it implied that they're lovers?
Because I'm expecting you to like have a twist. And they were lovers the whole time.
And they were roommates.
Oh my god, they were roommates.
This is a very professional event. They're going to a conference. At this point, Ash had wandered back over to the antique... What?
Yeah, like no one's ever hooked up at a work conference.
Yeah, no one ever. Okay, at this point, Ash had wandered back over to the antique lift-style elevators, where Gary now stood. Neat place, Ash mused. Fancier than anything in Pallet Town. You're really moving up in the world. Gary scoffed, replying, I'll say, there's not even a hotel back home. Unless you count your place, everyone is always staying there.
That's funny.
A barking laugh echoed through the marble-floored atrium. Why, Delia is nothing if not the best, most consummate of hosts. The two turned to address the source of the outburst. A short, somewhat hunched man with graying sandy hair who was dressed in a tightly buttoned white lab coat and a maroon cravat sidled up next to them, stopping so close to Ash that the young man had to take a step back to even be able to make proper eye contact. Professor! Gramps? The professor adjusted his cravat, which was pressing so tightly against his skin, for a fleeting second Gary thought that it must be so uncomfortable. My, what a surprise! Gary, my boy, glad you made it! And Ash, what an unexpected pleasure! I didn't know you'd be coming along as well. Ash laughed as he elbowed his childhood friend playfully. Yeah, well, what can I say? Couldn't pass up the opportunity to see Gary embarrass himself. Gary rolled his eyes, another loud guffaw as the elder oak scratched behind his ear. The corners of Gary's mouth twitched down into a slight frown. He wasn't quite sure how to describe the feeling, but whatever it was coiled uneasily in his stomach. Probably just pre-presentation jitters. He was a bit jealous of his grandfather's excitable demeanor, but after 30 years of public speaking, it was no wonder Gramps wasn't the least bit nervous. I think I'm going to head up. It's getting late, and I want to study my notes a bit more before tomorrow. Gary pressed the elevator's up button. Our rooms are on level 3, Ash. Here's your room key, he said, handing over the plastic card. Thanks, I'm going to stay up a bit. They have a bar and a cool fire pit outside I want to check out. See you tomorrow. Professor Oak jerked his hand up in an awkward wave goodbye, his fingers crooking stiffly. Oak slowly lowered it, tenderly cradling his knuckles with his other hand. Arthritis gets worse every day. Gary pressed the up button again. Where was that damn elevator? You seem a bit on edge, Gary. Nervous about the presentation? He shrugged. Maybe just a little. I've never spoken in front of a crowd before. Oak scratched behind his ear again. Oh, I wouldn't worry. Fear can be your friend in the right dose, but too much. Too much is the mind killer, or so they say. The elevator finally dinged, and the lift doors creaked open slowly. I guess you're right. Well, good night, Gramps. Smell you later. Silly, but an old favorite. He stepped inside, turning back to face his grandfather. You go on ahead. I was hoping to catch up with Ash. It shouldn't take long. Gary watched as his grandfather rotated rigidly on his feet and hobbled away. Shorter than I remember, Gary mused pensively. But I guess he's no spring chicken. As his hunched form retreated, Gary thought that he maybe ought to visit more. It wasn't like Oak was getting any younger, and he was really starting to show his age. 1:13. The harsh red glow from the digital clock in his room felt like it was burning a hole in his eyelids. He couldn't sleep. Gary yanked the covers to his chin. No, too hot. Then threw them back. No, too cold.
All right, Goldilocks.
You ever get that way? You ever, like, just, you get cold and then you pull the covers up and then you're, like, sweating immediately? And then
every night of my life, yes.
Yeah. Ugh, nothing was working. This was useless. Nothing felt right. He was too strung out on nervous energy. No way he was going to get any rest like this. Gramps was always a night owl, Gary thought. Maybe he'd still be up and wouldn't mind helping him talk out his jitters. I think he said he was staying in room 366, Gary thought to himself, recalling an earlier conversation they had had on the phone before they arrived. He slipped quietly out of his room, making his way down the hall. Reaching the correct door, Gary gave a quiet but purposeful knock. After a few moments, no one answered. Another knock. Nothing. Gramps was a notoriously light sleeper. Even if he had dozed off, surely he would have heard. It wasn't that late anyway. Could it be that he was still outside on the beach with Ash, talking? Gary made his way downstairs, passing the empty reception desk, the sign said, "Be right back," and crossed through the doors outside to the fire pit. The beachside bar was empty. The soft ksh-ksh of lapping waves and the crisp crackling of logs on the roaring bonfire were the only sounds. "Gary." A halting, strained voice, almost a whisper. A cold jolt of adrenaline shot through his heart. He spun around, only to see Professor Oak standing just behind him, wearing a slightly unsettling grin. He jumped, startled at the proximity. "Jesus, tap dancing Christ, Gramps, you scared the ever-living shit out of me." Oak tossed a pale piece of driftwood onto the fire, the flames dancing and licking at it greedily. "Where is everyone? guess folks around here turn in early or something, huh? Gary questioned, that uneasy feeling nodding up in his stomach again. Oak threw another chunk of that pallid driftwood onto the blaze, and the flames crawled even higher. The ocean breeze shifted, and some of the smoke wafted toward him. Gary's nose wrinkled. Oh, God, what was that acrid smell? Yes, busy day tomorrow. Conference. Oak itched at the back of his ear again, and through the deep haze of the bonfire smoke, Gary thought he saw some skin beginning to peel away from the bone. What the?
Oh, Jesus.
He blinked rapidly through his watering eyes, hoping he was just fucking imagining things. Gramps, where's Ash? You guys stayed up talking, right? Did he go to bed? Oak seemingly did not hear him and continued to stare gleefully into the hypnotic blaze. Gramps? Gary pressed, growing increasingly more alarmed at this uncharacteristic behavior. Oh, Ash, you say? Quite. The fire crackled and hissed, embers erratically stealing away into the inky black sky. Right. Gramps, I came down because I couldn't sleep, and I've been thinking about my presentation. If it's not too late, can we cover the highlights? Can I get your thoughts? Oak materialized behind him, his hand clamping down on his shoulder, fingers digging so tightly into his skin that it was almost painful. Absolutely. Why don't we retire to my room? We can finish things there. The elevator gave a low chime, metal scraping harshly on metal as the gate struggled open. Gary made his way down what seemed an impossibly long hallway, Oak trailing behind him like a shadow. They reached room 366. Gary shifted uncomfortably as Oak reached around from behind him to slot the key into the card reader. The door swung open to the dark room, and he stood there for what seemed like forever as he stared into the abyssal maw that patiently waited to swallow him entirely. He felt his grandfather's hand on his back, urging him forward. As he crossed the threshold and the door clicked shut behind him, that's when he first heard it. The buzzing. With each step forward, the louder the droning became. And then the stench hit him. A putrid metallic reek that choked his lungs. He recognized that smell. He'd encountered something similar when he was studying the hunting grounds and behaviors of mandibuzz, who liked to eviscerate their prey before leaving the carrion to decay in mesquite trees. The fetor of decay gagged him, and Gary stumbled forward, head reeling with nausea. Beneath his boot, something soft squelched, and he collided with the wall. He pressed a hand against it to steady himself, but his fingers came away slick and sticky. The band of moonlight streaming in only illuminated his hand enough to see that it was covered in something black, something... Gramps, what the actual fuck is going on? Gary cried out. Gramps! He-he-he! A mocking laugh came from somewhere deeper in the darkness. Professor. The soft squelching of footsteps as the dark shape twisted closer. The voice spoke again, less human this time. Samuel Oak. The spoken name dripping with such malignant vitriol that Gary physically recoiled. The figure shuffled forward, just close enough for his adjusting eyes to see it more clearly. Whoever, whatever this was, Gary thought, couldn't possibly be his grandpa. It just wore his likeness. The bar of moonlight fell across the oak thing's face, as if it were cleaved right across the middle. It scratched behind its ear again. The skin there was separating from the true face underneath, like an old wallpaper peeling away from a wall. He wasn't supposed to be here, that boy. A detour, but what an unexpected pleasure. The oak thing licked its lips and took a step closer to Gary, who moved backward in kind. Not my first choice, this face, but it made the job so much easier. Twice as nice, it continued, pulling the constricting knot of the maroon cravat loose at last. A line of silver sutures glinted under the harsh white of the moon glow as it fell away. Twice as nice, it repeated. Gary opened his mouth to speak, but a dread he'd never known gripped him so tightly he felt he couldn't breathe, and no words came. They were always in my way, always there, leeches, both of them, taking up her time, taking her away from me. The oak thing suddenly jerked, twisting its torso erratically as if it were adjusting an uncomfortable garment. She never looked at me the way she looked at him, so I thought if I could wear that face, if I could mime that part. It trailed off as if imagining some deluded fantasy.
I think I figured it out. I figured it out.
Hold on.
Okay.
Snapping back to reality, the imposter looked up and fixed Gary in its withering gaze. If I could become him. Gary sank to his knees, the crushing weight of the horrifying realization having become too much to bear.
Did Gary figure it out?
Twice was nice, but they say three times is the charm. The scream finally came. A cold hand fell on Lewis's shoulder. Rachel's voice was grating, full of dirt. Delia looked up from the book she just finished. Inexplicable chill ran through her. What an ending! She imagined book club discussion would be exciting this week, thanks to Louise's latest horror selection. As she waited in the ferry terminal, she glanced down at her watch. 8:45 a.m., she sighed. The conference was to start at 9, and she certainly didn't want to miss Samuel's lecture. Last night, when she'd spoken to her son, he'd promised he'd be there to pick her up at 8:30. That boy, always running late, she thought exasperatedly. A familiar male voice called out from behind her. Darling, it said. The end.
Yay!
Well?
No, thoughts? I liked it. Definitely horror.
Oh, did you think I did a good job with the assignment?
I think so, yes. You're in a Halloween mood for sure.
I am in a Halloween mood.
So the Delia paragraph was the one that tripped you up?
So the finishing it up tripped me up, and then like how to get to the end, and I wasn't quite sure what to do with Gary, but I wanted to say I took inspiration from Stephen King. The ending is a homage to Pet Sematary. So
that's okay. I knew it was familiar. I didn't know you liked Pet Sematary.
I haven't read it per se, but I mean, obviously, it's a classic. And I was like, I want to pull inspiration, or at least I want to pay homage to like a prolific horror writer somehow. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And like Stephen King is the guy, one of the guys, I guess. But I was like, okay, I think this is perfect. Like, if I can kind of borrow from the ending of that. And I think it kind of worked well. I don't know what you thought, but...
Okay, so maybe I did misunderstand. Maybe I didn't get it.
What's confusing?
Was that Mimey?
Yes, it was.
Okay, that's what I thought.
The imposter.
Okay, that's what I thought. Okay, making sure.
I kind of wanted to leave some elements for suspense, but I guess we can move into, like, post-fanfic analysis. Was it clear what happened to Ash?
Yeah, I got that.
I thought that was kind of fucked up. I told Austin pre-recording, or when we were texting, I was like, this might be the most unhinged thing I've ever written. I don't know. Did it do its job? Was it scary?
Yeah, it was. You were way more vivid than I thought you were going to be honest.
I was thinking it wasn't vivid enough. I was like, I think this might be... I was worried it might come across as a little cliche, to be honest. Now to wait another whole year to do another fanfiction.
You don't have to wait for long, because now it's my turn.
That's right. Austin.
Oh, boy.
Go right. For it. I'm so excited.
Why? Don't be.
Because I don't think you've ever written, like, a true romance.
Well, I may not have yet.
All right. Well, either way, I'm sure we'll be entertained.
All right, this is called Mr. and Mrs. Oak.
I'm excited.
She fidgeted in her chair. The chair wasn't uncomfortable, but the situation she was in sure was. She couldn't remember the last time she had been seated in a fancy Calusian restaurant in an expensive dress, waiting for a date to arrive. Had she ever been on a date like this? Usually, Delia Ketchum spent her days at home, tending to the garden and maintaining a clean house. Of course, that had gotten significantly easier ever since her son had caught Mimey at her request. And, you know, before Mimey killed everyone.
Right, right. This is an alternate universe, apparently.
Yep. Delia had always been a homebody. Not that there was much of a nightlife in the sleepy town of Pallet. Ever since Ash had left the home, however, Delia had been spending much more time at the Oak Laboratory than she had in years. It took her back to her time as a graduate student, poring over research notes, helping the professor with all the miscellaneous tasks he allowed to build up around him. Ever since Ash had brought Tracy to town, the professor had had some much-needed assistance around the laboratory. Still, Delia often found herself stopping by with any number of baked goods or home-cooked meals to share. In the past several months, Professor Oak's bike route had taken him out of his way to stop by the Ketchum household every morning, at least until his bicycle had been taken by a pack of Diglett.
Oh my god. I was hoping that would come up. Yay!
That was for you.
Thank you so much.
It had become a daily ritual, checking up on one another at each other's homes with some flimsy excuse. Delia told herself that she had to make sure somebody kept Professor Oak in good shape, and as it became clear that her son was more interested in calling up the professor rather than her, she added the reasoning that she may as well stay around the lab in case Ash made an unexpected call. It was clear that there was an attraction forming between Delia and Professor Oak, even if neither had openly acknowledged it. Perhaps they were both too afraid to put a label on what was developing and feared any action might risk the comfortable bond that had formed between them. Delia had often wondered if she was just being silly. This man had known her since she was a young girl, after all. Was this just an imagined flight of fancy? And if it wasn't just something she'd imagined, would a theoretical relationship between the two even be appropriate?
Would it?
Sure, Delia was a fully grown woman now. But Palletown was a small village full of gossips, and there was no need to give them any fodder. Maybe Delia was just overthinking things. The unspoken tension between the two was why an invitation to a date was such a surprise. It arrived in the Ketchum Homes mailbox in the form of a simply worded postcard. Tonight, 8 o'clock. Wear something to Les Poussées Reines in Viridian City.
What?
It'll be okay. A night to remember.
Oh. Okay, hold on. So he asked her out on a date via postcard
yes.
in her mailbox?
Yeah.
Oh my god. To Les Poussées Reines?
Les Poussées Reines.
I love that. Continue, that was great.
She tapped her foot impatiently under the table, trying to make herself appear not outwardly anxious. She wished she had a Rotom phone to look at while she waited, although that probably wasn't very ladylike. Not that she particularly cared about trivialities like that, but appearances were important. Suddenly, a loud noise clattered through the restaurant from the entrance. A man with a booming voice was shouting at the maitre d'. She had been so deeply thinking about herself, she hadn't even realized. Hey, all I'm saying is the name should be under Oak. Professor Oak. Professor Samuel Oak. You know, the world-renowned Pokemon professor.
What is this accent?
I don't know.
Is he like 1940s gangster?
He's whatever is coming out of my mouth.
Okay, that's what I'm imagining.
At the front of house desk, a manager was stood next to a lab coat sporting shouting man with a pimply-faced young man trying to make himself appear small nearby. Sir, the maitre d' said, as my staff was trying to tell you, we do not have a table here reserved under that name. Excuse me? She asked. The three men all turned to look at her. My name's Delia Ketchum. I think there's been a mix-up. I have a table here under Ketchum, and this man's with me. The manager nodded, attempting to hide his annoyance at the whole situation. Of course, madame. Apologies for the mix-up. If I may offer you a bottle of complimentary Messagoza wine, imported from Paldea? He asked.
Ooh, fancy up in here.
The man identifying himself as Oak beamed, evidently satisfied with the apology and for getting something for free. Now that's what I'm talking about. He patted the manager on the back with something of a forceful push. The manager contained his desire to roll his eyes and led the couple back to the woman's table. The two sat down. She attempted again to hide her discomfort as she folded her napkin upon her lap. Oak didn't appear to have the same concern as he plopped down in his chair, arms crossed, leaning back on the chair's hind legs as far back as it could go without toppling over, and placed both his ankles on the table, one crossed on top of the other.
Fucking rude.
Thanks for the save there, babe, he said with a shrug. I have to say, I was surprised when I got here there wasn't a reservation. I was lucky they had an open table, she replied. Yeah. I don't sweat the small stuff, you know, he said. So, Professor Oak, what spurred this invitation? Anything you'd like to discuss? Call me Sam, sweet cheeks, he bellowed with a wink. And hey, I'm a fancy guy. I like to treat a girl out for a night out on the town. You know what I'm saying? A night out on the town. Usually we're just in quiet little Pallet Town. Whenever you're not going out on tour making TV appearances. I know. I got a face for television, right? Sam's hair was wildly unkempt, sticking in all direction and with a curl in the middle of his forehead. His eyebrows could use a trim too, with a scar running down nearly from his scalp all the way to his eye. Said eyes looked sunken, almost like he was wearing mascara. She had to contain her reaction when he made his boast. It's like he wasn't even trying to be convincing. Whoever this man was, he was not Professor Oak.
Oh, okay.
Sam, is this a date? I'm just trying to figure out what your intentions are here. My intentions, Sam said with a wicked smile, are whatever you want them to be, Miss Ketchum. Her spine straightened. That's Mrs. Ketchum, she said. Whatever, babe. Forget about that loser guy. We both know you got the hots for me. Is this really the way you normally treat women? Does this attitude ever work? Maybe for the poetry groupies. Sam narrowed his eyes and placed his feet back on the floor. He leaned forward in his chair with a slump. It works, aight, most of the time. Of course, most dames ain't as contrary as you look to be. She drew her lips into a tight line and gave him a glare. I'm just the type of dame who likes to know what's really going on. So tell me, Sam, what's really going on here? And who are you, really?
Oh, I have a guess, but I don't know if I should guess. Is it somebody? Or should I keep my mouth shut? I don't know. I have a guess.
You can guess.
Who it is.
Who is it?
No, because
we'll come back to it.
Okay, we'll come back. Okay.
Okay.
I'm going to just pocket that. I'm going to keep that in my mind.
Sam's arm moved slightly. She peeked her eyes over the edge of the table to see that he was holding in his right hand a Remoraid, pointed towards her. What's going on here, Mrs. Ketchum? Is I got this here Remoraid. And this ain't no ordinary water gun Remoraid. This little fishy's got a bunch of fun moves. Bullet seed, charge beam, flamethrower, even hyper beam. Now, I thought you were supposed to be this dumb country chick, beauty queen, but clearly you can see through my disguise. But you're not smart enough to know when to keep your trap shut, even when a strange man is sitting right in front of you. So why don't you and I get out of here before you get hurt? I'd love a change of scenery, actually, she said. From her purse, she threw a smoke bomb to the floor.
Whoa! Delia, what the fuck?
Around them, patrons and waitstaff turned and looked stupidly as the smoke billowed in all directions. Fire! She shouted out to the entire restaurant.
Oh my god!
That got their attention. A panic ensued as chairs fell to the floor, screams rang out, and a mad rush began to the exits. Sam clattered to his feet too, trying to see through the thick smoke that was already filling the room. She wasn't anywhere to be seen, having disappeared in the chaos. You want a fire, huh? Flamethrower! He yelled. His locked and loaded Remoraid began a stream of flames from his hand, which he waved in all directions.
I'm sorry, I'm just imagining this insane thing.
An alarm began to clang and sprinklers turned on. The few remaining patrons screamed as they fled. Out of nowhere, Sam felt a deep blow to his stomach, a heel imprinted into his gut.
Oh shit.
What?
I said, oh shit.
He fell to the ground, landing on his right elbow on the way down. That sent the Remoraid flying, landing somewhere in the smoky room to flop around on the floor. Through the smoke, Sam could make out his assailant, standing on top of him. She wielded what looked like a baton to his throat, a sharp, blunt edge pointing towards him, and a black flower decoration adorning the other end. Now, she threatened, if you're not going to tell me who you really are, at least tell me who you work for. From beneath Sam's lab coat, a single thin mechanical arm burst out. Alex is losing it. And so am I. It knocked the baton out of her
hand.
What?
It just keeps getting more insane.
It knocked the baton out of her hand and shoved her backwards off of him. Sam clambered to his feet, ready to pounce and grab her, but she had once again vanished into the smoke and the downpour of water from the sprinklers. This broad just ain't worth it, he mumbled to himself. Still trying to catch his breath from having the wind knocked out of him, Sam made a break for it, running through swinging doors leading into the abandoned, soaked kitchen. At least there was no smoke to burn his eyes in here. He continued to run, but an object flew past his face. He had to blink before realizing it was a kitchen knife, now stuck into the wall, inches from his eyes. He turned to find the alleged Delia Ketchum standing on the other side of the kitchen, armed with another kitchen knife she had found discarded. Her ruined dress was covered in tears and clinging to her body. Her drenched brown wig was slipping, revealing tufts of tight blonde curls beneath it.
I knew it.
You know who it is?
Yeah.
Aight, how about leveling with me, you wannabe desperate housewife? Who are you, really, and who you work for? She smiled like a pyroar, eyeing its prey, and pulled off her wig completely. You can call me Team Rocket Special Agent 009, alias the Black Tulip. Yay. Or my favorite name to go by, Domino.
I fucking knew it. Oh my god.
I can't believe you figured that out.
Well, with the cane.
Yeah, that was the giveaway. She chucked the other knife towards Sam, who stood completely still. A second mechanical arm tore through his lab coat, catching it in midair in front of him. With a laugh, he tore off the tattered coat completely, revealing the circuitry of his invention strapped to his back, four arms menacingly standing on end. Oh, I heard of you, Tulip, Giovanni's little secret weapon. That's right, Domino beamed, but I've never heard of you. What's that say about you? Sam chortled. It means the boss got all kinds of enemies in his ranks that he don't even know about. Oh? Domino asked. This man really was an idiot. This was exactly what she needed. Yeah, oh. And they're damn smart, too. Smart enough to figure out Giovanni's been keeping tabs on that Ketchum woman. Close enough to intercept my little invite and send you here instead, apparently. Why do you think that is? Just got the hots for her or something? Domino couldn't help but to sigh. Mr. Giovanni can be sentimental like that. You wouldn't know it to look at her, but that milk and cookies mommy's got a history to her. Took me a while to figure that out while preparing for our awful little date. Sam laughed. That makes sense. What a boring little lady, leaving the fun life behind. Not my type at all. Now you're way more my speed, doll. How flattering. You're the kind of man who likes to get his ass kicked, Domino teased. I'm the kind of guy who likes things to be dangerous, Sam said, as the mechanical arm slung the knife back across the room with a near imperceptible flick. Domino hit the deck just in time. The knife barely nicked her, drawing a millimeter of blood from her cheek and a small lock of hair. She swiftly turned the motion of dodging into a slide across the wet tiled floor, hurtling toward her opponent as he again tried to make an escape. He barely had moved at all by the time she crashed into him. Sam went tumbling to the floor, landing on top of Domino. She didn't, Alex made a face. She didn't hesitate while their bodies were awkwardly entangled, grabbing around his torso to find the contraption strapped to his back. As he fought to get back to his feet, she wrapped her legs around the back of his knees, trapping to the floor. With a series of yanks, Domino wrenched each of the mechanical arms from his body, tossing them aside in case they were able to continue operating away from the power source. She reached back around to the front side of his torso, shoving the straps off of him completely and lifting the entire backpack above the both of them. She then thrust it back down, knocking him on the back of the head with it.
Oh, wow.
Sam struggles to gain purchase and scramble away, stopped as he went limp on top of her. Domino panted as she felt a slight trickle of warm liquid drip onto her face, barely noticeable among the sprinkler water still coming down all around them. The blood from the back of Sam's head made the adrenaline rush subside for a moment. Domino had never actually killed someone before, at least not up close and personal like this.
Oh my.
She was surprised by how stunned she was. This mission wasn't supposed to escalate quite so quickly into violence. It was just meant to be protection for the Ketchum woman and to investigate who could be targeting the boss's secrets. Definitely a mission failure. The sound of distant sirens began to echo through the kitchen. Domino needed to regain her composure and gather herself before anyone could find her. Still out of breath, she shoved Sam off to the side and sat up. She took one more beat to draw on air. Suddenly, Domino felt someone grab her wrist. Sam lurched up next to her, nearly causing her to jump back from surprise. Now you, girlie, you're dangerous, he growled at her. Sam got back up to his feet, staggering a bit. He leaned over to grab Domino's other hand and help pull her back to her feet as well. The two leaned up against each other to stay upright. A barely legible voice came into the kitchen. This is Officer Jenny. Any criminals in there, come out with your hands up. The building's not surrounded yet, but it will be soon, so now's your chance to surrender.
Okay, not the right way to go about that, but sure, Ginny.
Domino let out a chuckle. As thorough as always, Ginny. Sam nodded at her. He said, "How about for our next date, you pick out where we go, huh?" He began to stagger off towards the back entrance. Domino reached out to place her hand on his shoulder. She pulled him forward, stood up as tall as she could, and gave him a quick peck on the scar over his left eye. "See you soon," she said. She bolted off into the opposite end of the kitchen, running back through the swinging doors and into the now largely dissipated smoke. Sam grinned and put his hand over the back of his skull, nursing the head injury that was slowly bleeding. "Damn straight this attitude usually works," he said to the empty kitchen. He headed back towards the exit. Minutes later, in an empty alleyway, Domino dialed the number pad on a payphone. She was immediately connected to the Team Rocket Mission Control Headquarters.
Oh.
"This is Agent 009, reporting in on the Imposter Professor Oak case. I've placed a subdural tracker onto the target. Returning to base to regroup." A voice on the line simply stated, "Confirmed, 009. She hung up the phone and looked down to inspect her destroyed dress. What a waste. "Idiot," she said with a smirk. And that's it. That's the end.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I was not expecting that. Good job, Austin. Okay. My stupid theory was, for a split second, and that's why I didn't want to say it, because I was like, I'm going to sound like an idiot. I thought it was Meowth in like a Samuel Oak suit. Like when you said...
You thought I was doing a Matty Blasting impression? I mean, I kind of was.
Yes. I thought like, okay, when he started talking like, you know, like a 1940s, 50s, like Meowth talks.
That's
how
Meowth talked. You're right.
Yeah. So I was like, oh my God, it's Meowth in like a skin suit or whatever. And then like you said, mechanical arms. So I was thinking like Team Rocket Meowth contraption, popular Pokemon magazine.
No, I decided not to reveal his identity.
Oh, okay. So it's still a mystery as to... I'm guessing he's just like... Well, no, he wouldn't work for Team Rocket. He's targeting Delia.
Well, he was secretly working against Giovanni from within Team Rocket.
Ah, so a double agent.
Here's the mechanical arms, by the way.
Okay, let me see if there's a photograph. Oh, my gosh. Okay, so the Imposter Professor Oak's Invention TCG card... That's awesome inspiration. I can't believe you took that and turned it into a
I didn't even know that card existed until just the other day.
I didn't either, but that's amazing. So was this like Mr. and Mrs. Smith?
Yeah.
Was that
the title? Watched the Amazon Prime version of that.
So the inspiration.
Yep.
Well,
that was the Imposter Professor Oak fan fiction episode.
That was fun. I really liked that. It's incredible what kind of insane things we come up with off of the same prompt. You didn't do horror, and I didn't do romance.
Even though I thought Ash and Gary were gonna, like, kiss.
Was there a tension?
I think I might be projecting from Sun and Moon when Red and Blue are, like, on their honeymoon in Hawaii. Yeah.
I was trying to be very mindful, I promised. Although there was a slight element, tiny, tiny at the end, but, like, I wouldn't necessarily call that, like, romance or anything.
What, when Delia was fucking Mimey in a skin suit?
What? No, she never... Oh my God, no, they never did
darling
anything.
Darling.
Mimey was pretending to be Oak, who... The implication was that they were in a relationship.
Exactly.
Good job, Austin. That was really fun. We didn't get any submissions from the audience, but that's okay. So we hope...
Yeah, I saw that coming. No kidding.
That's okay. It's hard to write stuff. I completely understand. But I enjoyed it. For all my bluster, I did enjoy it. So, now that we've gotten that out of the way on our schedule, what is next? What do we have to look forward to?
Back to the show, back to the Master Quest. The first episode is called, "Will the Real Oak Please Stand Up?" Please stand up.
No way.
Please stand up.
Was that a complete coincidence?
No, it was not.
"Will the Real Oak Please Stand Up?" Oh, I think I know the episode you're talking about.
Okay.
Do you think it is? Well, that's crazy that our prompt was Imposter Oak, like... To fit into this. I mean, I know your timing of it was probably intentional.
That was on,
like,
purpose, yes.
But the prompt itself was not.
Well, the second episode is going to be "Wish Upon a Star Shape."
I bet you that's a Star You episode.
You'd be incorrect.
A Star Shape? A Star Me episode?
Incorrect.
A Togepi episode?
Wrong.
Fuck, I'm out of
this
ideas.
It's very Misty focused.
Well, what other thing is a Star Shape? Maybe, is it about Swift or Speed Star?
Nope.
All right, well, I guess it's a mystery. We'll have to tune in to find out. All right, you guys. Well, thank you for joining us this week. I know it was a little bit different departure from our regularly scheduled programming, but next week we are back to Master Quest, so join us then. If you want to get in touch with us, give us your thoughts, feedback, questions, comments, whatever, we encourage it. You can reach out to us on outofthedryingpan@gmail.com. Again, outofthedryingpan@gmail.com. Or follow us over on Twitter, aka X, @outofdryingpan. Again, @outofdryingpan. Or you can always get in touch with us and check out our Instagram, @outofthedryingpan. Again, @outofthedryingpan. And if you want to support us, if you like the show and want to see more content, you can always subscribe to our Patreon and get access to all kinds of fun things over there. So check us out. The link is in our description. And we'd like to say, as always, thank you so much for listening, and join us next week as the journey continues. 151 の思い出目指して頑張ろう